the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 273.
Fresh looks, healthy paranoia.
Right.
Yeah, sounds like we're going to take a fresh look at paranoia. Well, we kind of are in a way.
Yeah. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
Yeah. So we were kicking around ideas of what to do for our fresh looks for this time, and Tom kind of came up with the idea to talk about what we do to lock down our machines or, you know, security-related things we do either for our personal or at work.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to find out what you do for that Plex system you got at home. Or is that that's not connected to the internet, is it?
Oh, yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Of course it is. For streaming stuff, so.
Yeah, well, it's a web-based connection. You know, everything it does, so either streaming videos and stuff, it's web-based over their own port. You know, what is it? Was it 4320 or something like that?
Okay. See, I thought it was all on the server and you were just, it was all self-contained and you were streaming from there.
Oh, well, it is self-contained. Okay. And it's a server sitting in my house, but then I allow it out to the internet.
Okay.
Technically allow it out and allowing people to connect in. But it uses SSL certificates, you know, to make, you know, secure connections and, you know, and it's authentication based. So you have to have, you know, somebody with that I give permission to log into it and watch stuff.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. So, and then technically it's a plugin on FreeNAS. And FreeNAS, you know, it takes time for them to update to the newer versions. But because it runs in a jail, a BSD jail, there's actually a script you can do. If you log in to the command line, you run a script, and it will update to the latest version of Plex. So because I have Plex Pass, I always want the latest version so I can get the new features. So I run that script.
Do you put it in a cron and have it run nightly? That way you don't even have to think about it?
Oh, that's a good idea. I haven't. Ah. I don't think you can, because you have to stop. There's two things you have to do. It's not just run the script. You have to like stop one thing, and I'm trying to remember what it is. Not the jail, but you have to stop one service, the plugin service, run the update on the jail, and then turn the plugin back on.
So it's a bit more involved.
Yeah.
The script gets bigger because the flappy thing needs to stop the other flappy thing.
Anyway, so yeah, and that's always the issue with running things that are either from a repository that's not the maintainer. You know, with just about anything. You know, if you're running any app like that, you know, it's always going to be a delay between when whoever runs the repository updates to what the project maintainer is running it. So Debian, you never want to install some things from Debian, because it's going to be so old that there might be flaws or vulnerabilities that aren't updated, you know, just because they don't get around to updating the repository, you know, like Nextcloud. I never do it from the apt-get install because it's so far behind. Even on Ubuntu that's even, you know, more updated, I do it straight from the repository that Nextcloud runs.
I do the same thing for certain tools like Ansible. Years ago, I would just install it straight from Python pip because the OS package maintainers version was so far behind, and there was things that I needed in the latest release that weren't available from the system package.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I agree. And so that's important. You know, that's more like feature-based, you know, that you need, right? Mm-hmm. Anything you have that's internet-facing, you definitely want to have update right away when there's security vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that having, at least for apt-based systems, using unattended upgrades and setting it to security updates automatically, and then if you're on Red Hat-based systems, using yum cron to do essentially the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I do the same thing with, I haven't done it with the app base or, you know, Debian or apt update, but I've used the Yumcron and I like it.
I believe it's a separate package just called unattended-upgrades.
Okay.
On my Debian-based systems, it's right in the initial like setup and install. I set it and forget it pretty much.
Yeah, cool.
As opposed to forget to set it.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I guess I was supposed to do that. Scratching the back of my head.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I just want to get started on this. Let's talk about exactly. Before we get too off topic on some of these other things, what I want to do was talk about there's no security through obscurity. So let's talk about the process from when we get a computer and how we comfortably put the tinfoil hat on and set it up. It's kind of some of the topics I wanted to cover here. I like to think about that too to make sure my security process isn't leaving my butt flapping in the wind.
Yeah, you don't want that happening.
You don't want that happening.
Sure. Well, besides all of the determining which piece of hardware to buy and how you pay with it, because that's a whole other rabbit hole, let's assume that you just got a brand new device. First thing you do, check if there's firmware updates or BIOS updates. Get those installed, assuming everything looks okay to you. I mean, you can only do so much with a BIOS firmware blob. You get the BIOS updated, you set a BIOS password and then the administrator password. That way, if your laptop ever flies off the roof of your car onto the freeway and someone picks it up, well, they just got an expensive brick.
Yeah, because maybe that may have happened at some point in time to someone.
It's very, very
just
possible.
Describing that for a friend, right?
Yes.
Describing this for a friend. And we will mention, in terms of devices, though, System 76 is popular. They natively support Linux quite well. So a lot of this is going to be focused on the fact that we all run Linux on our computers. So they're a good choice. What's the other? There's another company besides System 76 that supports Libre Boot. I'm trying to remember their name. Yeah, I can't
Purism?
Remember. Maybe that's it. They're another laptop manufacturer. Mm-hmm. But System 76 is probably your most popular one out there.
And to note, I'm running a System 76 Oryx Pro. They just had an update that came out that disabled the Intel management engine. So that was cool. But part of the install instructions were to reset BIOS to last known configuration, which wiped out the BIOS password, so I had to go back in and reset that. Mm-hmm. And speaking of while we're still in the BIOS, I turn off like the TPM configuration and several other things that escape me right now. But
you don't like the Trusted Platform module?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't have a reasoning for it other than
lack of trust.
Yes. I don't have a reason to keep it enabled, so okay. I would rather turn it off. I'll spend a good like half hour poking through the BIOS of a new machine that I get.
You know, and Phil, when you said that, I'm thinking to myself, wow, I was not really aware that that was a feature. And maybe this is something in later versions of the BIOS that you're running. But I think a lot of just quote-unquote regular Linux users who don't jump into that level, probably we're unaware of that.
Now, I could be completely paranoid, and there's also a good chance that I'm wrong because I don't know everything that goes on in there.
Yeah, and TPM isn't in all laptops.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
And it's especially older laptops.
It's only in the enterprise ones, technically. Right. Well, mostly.
Oh,
mostly,
good,
right.
Yeah,
and the even newer ones, you know. I think really the push came with new versions of Windows really started using it. So then the manufacturer started to include it. But I'm torn on that idea because historically you want to say, yes, run it off of TPM because that's supposed to be more secure. There's only certain ways to access it, and if you try to do it around whatever the approved methods are, then it doesn't work, and that's like by hardware level. And then the other thing is that encryption to decrypt, encrypt, to get to that data is all done in the hardware and not in software. So it really is some processing from your PC. But processors and RAM is so cheap and fast now.
Yeah, encryption does not really add much overhead.
Right. And then the other thing is that the even with TPMs, there's flaws have been found. And it's easier to update, you know, running software that you have on your system than it is a TPM.
Because firmware updates are much less likely. And we had that flaw with that ID card company that found out they were the algorithm they used in their hardware was producing predictable, not so random numbers.
Exactly.
So, you know, and that became a flaw. And that was actually in the old TPMs. That they built the silicone that went into a huge number of laptop manufacturers. So once again, there was a predictable number flaw based on the fact that you had the TPM. So you what you thought was relying on securely was there. So something to definitely consider.
And the last thing that I'll do is disable USB booting, SD card booting, LAN booting. I don't need that. If I'm turning on this laptop, then I only need to boot from a specific device that's in there. So I will remove every other possible boot loading option other than my hard drive.
Yes.
Right. And then
that makes sense.
And if you do need to boot from something else, you know, you just go in and turn it on.
Yep. Type in my couple of passwords to get into the BIOS, and I'm right back in there.
Exactly.
And you shouldn't be lazy like me and just make sure that it checks the DVD and USB first before it goes to the hard drive. Yeah. And that's only because I continually throw different distros on there, and I usually...
You have a use case, though. Know. That makes sense.
Now, I can't speak for System 76, but I do know Lenovo has always been on top of this, even back when they were IBM. When you put a BIOS password on a Lenovo, you have to get out the soldering gun if you'd like to remove that BIOS password by swapping out the BIOS. A lot of the other companies have pins you can jumper just to reset them. That's pretty common. We've actually done that for a lot of people.
Yeah, I remember with Dells. I used to do that.
Yep, with Dells. And Dell has a back door. All the Dells I've ever seen, if you take the serial number and this tool is out there, allegedly.
What do you have to search for to find it? Dell backdoor?
Yeah. You can use the service tag of a Dell to get a master password. There's master password generators that Dell has, service and support, that may or may not have somehow leaked onto the internet in certain areas. So basically, yeah, so if you have a BIOS password, you thought you're secure, if you have one of those tools, you can do it. I don't know to what version it goes up to, but the fact that Dell can do that over the phone by you reading them serial numbers and them giving you a special password, that's really concerning. Lenovo, and this is actually one of the things that's kept Lenovo in some of the government contracts, is that reason that there's not a bypass, that you have bricked laptops if you do not know the password.
Oh, hey, yeah. The Houston Chronicle has an article, How to Use a Backdoor Master Password to Change Your BIOS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Houston Chronicle.
Yeah. So I'm curious about System 76, but for all these aforementioned things, I mean, obviously, if someone physically has your laptop, that's a whole different thing. That's why the next thing we should probably talk about is what you do before you load your OS. You put a hard drive password.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So we got that.
Full disk encryption. It's easy to do. It's another password. If you want to do that on your servers or not, that's really up to you, depending on your location in the world and having to crash card a server.
Yeah.
Or have some data center tech go type in a password for you. But we'll stick to like your administration
personal
laptop,
yeah,
or desktop.
What do you use for that? I mean, do you use the during the install of the OS, they use the encryption they suggest, or do you have a different tool?
Let's say I'm going through a Debian install. I can click the button for full disk encryption.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Yeah, I've seen that. Now, what happens if somebody's already installed and they decide they'd like to encrypt the hard disk after the fact? Is that doable?
I don't think no. You can't.
I don't believe so.
They don't, that I know of, have an option to encrypt the hard drive after install. Because it has to kind of be done at the installation layer. And I'm correct me if I'm wrong, Debian uses Lux when you use Fold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're using Lux, and it has to be installed at the beginning. You can't Lux something once it's installed. It needs to put the data somewhere. Well, technically, there is someone that came up with a really clever hack to push Linux into memory. I don't know if you've seen this.
I did. Yeah, yes. that was really, really cool.
Push it into memory, unmount your hard drive, do magic to the hard drive while it's in memory. Just don't lose anything or crash because there's no way to recover. Put it back in a booting state and then switch back to it. So it's Non-trivial.
Technically, yes, Mary, we can do that. Non-trivial at all.
Yeah, it definitely sounded non-trivial.
Yeah. Hmm. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, but that's and this is one of those things. If someone does physically have your laptop, unless we know Lenovo does a good job, but you have to break the soldering gun out and swap the BIOS, but still, once they physically have a laptop, all bets are off. So you're going to take the hard drive out. They're going to try things like that. That's why it's important to have an OS password in an OS-based full disk encryption. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But if you did want to migrate to that, and you have, let's say, a spare hard drive sitting around, you can drag and drop your files onto the spare hard drive or rsync them or transfer files in any number of ways. Reinstall the OS on your laptop and then just move your files back.
Yep.
Granted, it'll take you like an hour or two or
a day. Depending on how much data you have, yeah.
Yeah. Right. But if you wanted to do that, it is possible.
Yeah, and I run my systems too. Even my extra hard drives that I attach to my system, I use Lux. The nice thing is it's well supported for all the different graphical interfaces where you can just type the password without having to do the command line. When I plug in any of my Lux encrypted drives, it prompts me for the password. I type it in, and I can mount those drives.
All of these passwords are just extra layers of the security onion.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then setting a password before you log in to a system, disabling guest login, because you don't need that.
No.
You're right.
Turn that off. And the goal ultimately is a laptop flying off the roof of a car should be an inconvenience, not a life-changing event. You know what I mean? For privacy.
It could be a budget-changing event.
It's a budget-changing event for sure. Event we will adjust the budget to account for this now. But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like I you know, people ask me worried about, like, I leave a hard drive sitting and I'm like, it's all encrypted. So if someone took it, I would be upset if they took one of my hard drives that help contain my backups, but I would not go, oh no, they have the keys to my kingdom. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another thing too. What if you have a dual boot system? What happens then as far as...
It's only the half that's encrypted is going to be. So you can set it up so, like, your Debian install is encrypted, but then a Windows boot next to it, mm-hmm. and it won't be. So.
Yeah, so at that point, it's encrypting the individual partitions.
Yep.
Okay.
And but you can still do it, have full disk encryption. It's just if you ever update the other or one of the systems, if it changes the boot... you know, or like Grub mm-hmm. updates or something,
okay.
then it could work your whole system.
You'll have to go fix the chain loader
yeah.
and all of that.
Oh,
and that can get kind of messy sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you don't remember it from the last time that you had to do it, and then you had to learn the entire system, and then you have to go back and do all the research on it, so that way you can forget it for the next time it happened.
Right, I remember exactly. doing that a long, long time ago, just that... The Windows chain loader?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was years ago. I've forgotten it.
for good reason. I would, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why when this Surface boots, the default boot is to KDE Neon. And then listed there is this kind of mishmash of Windows. Oh, okay, that's where the Windows boot is.
So once you get all that, next thing you're going to want to do is figure out which repositories you want to trust. And we're not going to get into the debate of which operating system you want. I mean, we like Cubes. That's what Phil's a big fan of.
Mm-hmm. And I am too, although I'm not going to put it on this.
Yeah. But whichever option you trust, this is something that the Windows is really trying to do, and they're doing it completely wrong, as if there's not other companies and major corporations using it properly, but repositories. Windows Store is trying to be a repository, but they've already had some really bad software in there and had some incidents because they just don't do – their goal to get things in their own software store / repository has caused them to be lax on security apparently. But what we do is we're used to trusting the repositories in Linux. And kind of the reason for that is where they do packet signatures, which I think there's a funny website I think we mentioned in the last show called Why App Doesn't Need HTTPS. And it's because of the way each package is signed. So as long as we're trusting the repositories, which we do because there's enough people, has there ever been any major breaches on any repositories that you're aware of? Of a mainstream Linux versus...
Debian had... Wasn't there...
There was something that happened in Azure. They were putting up they were putting up someone else's binaries, but I don't recall correctly. I know this was an Azure repository problem for certain types of certain Linux operating systems.
Yeah, the methods and processes they go through to keep these repositories safe are extensive. To make sure everything is signed, everything's compiled properly. The closest we have had was Python. We talked about that as well, where people were typo squatting and putting different tools in Python. So it's not exactly a security issue as much as a typo squat different program type thing.
That happens a lot in the Node.js community as well. So their package manager is called NPM, and it becomes kind of like a community problem, and how those different foundations want to handle those problems.
Yeah, because they're a slightly different problem. They're of a different nature. But ideally, with Linux, you don't really have to download any software from the internet. Once you just add the repositories that are for the software you have, for example, I trust the Caden Live people for my video editing, so I add their repository so I get the latest version. I don't have to worry about downloading it from some random source and potentially having something injected into it, and the repositories allow you just to update it. This is actually part of the base that, in kind of the big picture of things, keeps Windows as a less secure option, because you're always loading third parties except for the Windows updates. For Linux, it's not just the operating system updates. It's all the packages and all the things that you can run that are all the programs that run on this computer all come from packages, which also kind of tightens up the security a bit. With what does PPA stand for? I'm trying to remember that it's
private package.
Private package archives. As long as you trust the different PPAs, there's a few of them.
I thought it was personal, but
Personal package archives.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it is. We gotta Google it.
that quiet you heard.
That quiet. We just know you find the trusted PPA, and this is also how you add the amazing universe of software that was available through my distro from Ubuntu to CentOS or Debian didn't have the thing.
Power purchase agreement. Whole wrong definition.
Personal package archive.
Yeah. Personal package archive. Mary for the win.
Yeah.
So, and that's something that really makes sense. So, like, I'm using.
And there's a PPA in Urban Dictionary, but we won't go there.
Don't use that one.
Okay.
I'm using, like, one of the things I wanted to load. I got HexChat. I'm trying to think of what else I had to load a PPA for that I wanted a newer version. Well, I was looking at GNU Cache. I want a newer version of that, so I have to use their PPA. But because they're also trusted, that allows me to use the 3.0 version without the problems of the older packages that you find in there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a different concept that I think not everyone understands. Like, Linux makes things, in my opinion, just a lot easier once you get your head wrapped around the concept, because they've made the installing software process really, really simple. You know, apt-get install or the software stores that are run by Ubuntu or any of these other.
And the flat packs or Snap, you know, those methodologies too. So there's quite a few options.
Yeah, and that's another way you can trust software on there. Now, one of the things that if you're a Linux admin, like a few of us all sitting at the table are, is we got to generate our SSH keys. Mm-hmm. Where do you back those up at?
If you've got a password manager, you can do that there. If you put your public key into some sort of configuration management that gets deployed to a server, well, if I forget, then my teammate can take my new public key and deploy it to any boxes. So if it's your own servers and you don't have something like ILO or some sort of like remote backdoor management, you can throw that into your password manager, or you can print it out, put it into a safe, and then have to type in 4,000 odd characters.
And don't make a mistake.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So there's several things you can do.
And the reason you're saying that you have a teammate do it is because...
If you're working on part of a team, yes.
Yeah, it's because their key is in and trusted already on the systems, and you want to get a new public key on there. You can't send yours out because your key isn't trusted yet, so you have your teammate send your public key. And the key is... Or the the important part of that is it's the public key, not your private key.
Yeah, do not send your private key out.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely do not send the private key out.
Yes. Yeah.
Thought I should clarify my statement there.
Yeah. And this is something, there's a few people that wrote some tools, because what happens is someone asked, because I was updating my .dot files on GitHub, and someone's like, can you just update things in a root when you're doing like your git init? I'm like, no, because if you did it in like your root of your home folder and it went initted something that maybe was your private key, and there's a few tools that go out there and find private keys that are all over GitHub from people just randomly git initting in the wrong directory. So you want to make sure that those are very, very locked down. My methodology is the private key that I use is on two locations, one on my desktop and one on my laptop. That's, I just keep the private key in both places, and that way if I lose one of the devices, it's on one of them. Statistically unlikely for me to lose both devices at once, and if I do, I'll just cry. That's my plan C.
Then you have to start typing your passwords.
Yes, I'd have to actually remember what those passwords were and then have to type them in.
That's if you have password authentication turned on.
I don't. Yeah. You have to go to the terminal for any systems. I always turn that off. And that's on the security side for servers. Password authentication, like immediately when I spin up a server, I turn that off. Because does Lino let you do this? AWS does. You can drop your public key in and turn it off as a config when you deploy the things. DigitalOcean does it too with their droplets.
Linode, you can get in through this thing called Lish. It's the Linode shell.
Okay.
And there's another way to get into it too. I've had to do it several times.
Yeah.
It's always a pain, but it gets me back to where I need to be.
Yeah. My solution is generally spin up server, log in, copy keys, turn off authentication. And because I'm doing this internal on my network before it ever gets exposed to the internet, I don't feel as though there's a huge worry. High entropy passwords from top to bottom is a...
Oh, yeah.
Get those fingers flying when you come up with it. Come up with a passphrase. The longer, the better.
You can come up with a bunch of easy-to-type words, but in the middle of one of them, you just replace a character with with a number or something like that. So that, in other words, obviously I have no password with this, but like the quick brown fox jumped.
Yeah, or the correct battery horse staple. The XKCD thing.
Yeah.
Which is actually a popular to use password, apparently.
Oh, no.
And so it's, it's easy. I mean, it's like an algorithm, and I have an algorithm that I use. I'm not going to get into any further detail as far as all the sites and places where I have accounts, so that I have an algorithm, and I just use that. So I have a backup list of these passwords. It's a long post-it. No, just kidding. but I pretty much know what I need to do to get into my account on a site, just because I use an algorithm.
Yeah, I go to the method of password generator, password management. You know, mm-hmm. I use LastPass, and I tell it to give me a 21 character password, and then I just paste that into the system that I'm at, mm-hmm. or whatever I'm. Using at that time.
Mine are a little shorter.
Right.
Probably makes it a little less secure.
I really am a strong advocate of password managers, because every password should be high entropy and long, and it needs to be unique for every system that you touch. Websites or whatever, it needs to be unique. Otherwise, it just causes issues.
And if you're looking for a good password manager, you say, okay, I don't want to use any of the cloud-based ones. KeePass has come a long way. So if you sync KeePass to Dropbox, it actually has concurrent and merge support now. I didn't realize it had that. Someone pointed out they're using it for their team internally. And I'm like, well, what happens if someone changes the password? They said it handles all the merges. It's a plugin on there. It's really slick. Mm-hmm. So you can set it up on there and share it from a team standpoint and merge changes to the database. Because it used to, if one person changed it, you had to figure out what the differences were and put it back together. So KeePass actually has come a long way to being supported. But the more popular one is going to be 1Pass. What's one you?
I like 1Pass.
Yeah.
My wife and I use that because there's a family plan that we were in the beta for. So it's for us, it's like $3 a month or something. Yeah.
And yeah. LastPass is equally really reasonably priced. It also has a family plan. Mm-hmm. The standalone, the free version works wonderful. The paid plan is like $24 a year. So, and then the family plan is like $60 a year for up to five people, I think. So,
it's something like that. Starting to use a password manager can be a bit difficult at first, but a week into it, you'll wonder why you didn't start sooner.
Yeah, once you've moved to a password manager, life gets a whole lot easier.
Oh, absolutely. If my wife or I forget a password, and then we know we don't have to ask the other one, hey, what's this? We can just go look it up ourselves.
Yeah, KWallet, isn't that a password manager?
Yeah, I've not used that one, though. I've seen it.
I use it as a backup for my passwords.
Yeah, KWallet is KDE-based. Seahorse is the GNOME-based one. Mm-hmm. I haven't used those.
Leave it to GNOME to have one that's underwater. I'm joking. Hey, you know, one thing I wanted to mention, too, as far as in your laptop, you know, you've got obviously default DNS servers that either get set up in your, well, maybe not your laptop necessarily, but are set up on your router that your laptop uses. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. I was very hesitant to mention it because the article came out April 1st. I thought, this is a trick article. I'm going to be embarrassed. But then I kept reading it, and I'm thinking, you know, it sounds so real. Isn't that what they all say before they find out they've been tricked? But anyway, Cloudflare and Firefox, apparently, Cloudflare is launching a free privacy-focused DNS at 1.1.1.1. And it's partnering with Mozilla to support encrypted connection with the Firefox web browser. And that kind of goes back to the earlier discussion we had about Firefox. Was that on, were we online when we did that, or was that between shows?
Yeah, no, it was in the show.
In the show, but, well, in related to it, something we didn't mention, but to expand on that, is they offer HTTPS DNS. They're working on that, and it's going to be supported in Chrome, I believe, and Firefox, and on Android phones. I believe the support on Android phone. I know it's in the CyanogenMod, the different added ROMs and things like that to the phone. There's an option to do that. So that way your DNS isn't subject to whatever problems may be arising from Wi-Fi networks you connect to randomly as you wander around with your phone. But the same thing applies to your laptop. And when you encapsulate it all in HTTPS, they don't know where you're going because it all does one solid HTTPS signal across for your DNS and the transport layer for your data itself. So to the person, they only see the one connection.
It's called DOH.
Go?
DOH. No, DOH. D-O-H.
Oh, D-O-H.
It's DNS over HTTPS.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
DOH.
DOH.
That's what the people trying to sniff your packets say. DOH. They're using HTTPS over DNS. I can't see what they're
sniffing
doing.
Sniffing my packets.
And all right. Related to that on the password managers, the web-based ones, we'll probably end it with, use two-factor everywhere possible. Mm-hmm. I use, and my favorite protocol is everything, and all protocols should be this if we're up to Tom, TOTP-based, which is the time-based authentication protocol. It's an open standard, and it allows tokens to base, as long as you have the time right on your phone, it works. There's a few different utilities you can use to do that. One of my favorites is, and I had it on the tip of my tongue, is called Authenticator Plus. I don't know if you've seen this, guys have seen this one, but Authenticator Plus actually supports encrypted backups. So you can actually have this on more than one device and it syncs with the other devices. So if you wanted to have two tokening devices, it works really, really well. I've also got a bash script that generates tokens off of the code. So that's kind of cool too.
Hmm. Yeah.
I guess as far as key storage, you could also put some of your data on a YubiKey.
Oh, yeah. That's another good way to do that.
There's also...
And YubiKey is a TPM, right? That it's just USB-based. And because it can generate keys and it will respond with your key. And because it's not like part of the system, you can remove it when you don't want it to be, you know, accessed or on the system.
It's a... Wikipedia says it's a hardware authentication device, but yeah, it'll generate keys for you. one-time passwords. You can even install a PAM module, so that way when you log into a system and try to issue like a sudo command, you can press your YubiKey or run some sort of YubiKey command, and it will give you those elevated privileges. I thought that that was pretty nifty.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong here. Didn't the latest version of YubiKey, didn't they close source it after their last release in 2016? I believe their newer versions are all closed source, though.
I am unaware of that, but
we covered it a while ago. I was looking through the notes, and I found it was in May of 2016. It looks like I don't know if they changed their stance on open source, but there's a fork. Someone took it and made NitroKey, which is an open source one. And the reason for starting it was because YubiKey went closed source.
Good to know.
So something interesting there. But it's the same exact concept. So,
excellent.
Yeah. There's more ways to protect yourself. That's what's important. Lock everything down. Wear your tinfoil hat comfortably.
Mm-hmm. And wrap your computer in tinfoil to really complete the ensemble.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
Or Mylar, there you go.
Yeah, Mylar works good, too.
I duct tape the vents to try and super air gap from attackers.
There you
now,
go.
Granted, the laptop
you
burns
what?
Out, but...
Wait, but nobody's going to get anything out of it, right?
So secure, even I can't get back in ever.
Yeah, never. It's just melted pile of silicone now.
And we've already talked about the tape on the webcams?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, we haven't. So in front of me is a webcam that has a nice piece of red tape on it.
Mm-hmm.
Band-Aids happen to work great, and I see them on more laptops than I ever want to. But
right.
Band-Aids are really popular. Tape is fine. You don't need a Band-Aid over it, but I don't know why that's so popular. People put Band-Aids over it.
But you can get those little Band-Aids that have little cartoon characters. And
that's
like
true.
Fun.
You can have SpongeBob looking back at you. I'm okay with that.
Or the Minions.
I used to have one of those little slider things.
I think Mary's got one.
So thick. Yeah, Mary has one on hers. Mm-hmm. But on mine, it's so thick that the laptop won't latch shut.
This one's pretty thin. But you know what I have here? I think when you guys told me that's what the second little aperture was for facial recognition. So because the little slider here only covers one of the two little holes, what I ended up doing is putting a little KDE button label over the second one. I have that. I don't know if you guys do, but...
I need to do that.
And so... So I've got the slider for the camera, and then I have the little KDE label for the facial recognition for the second one. And then, of course, there's on this computer, there's another one on the other side. So, Tom, somebody's been looking at all of your stuff since put something in the corner there. But on the back side, because this, you know, this can disconnect for a tablet.
Yeah, the downside is, and people have dealt with this a little bit, is they're all listening devices at some point still, because even if you covered the camera, the audio is still accessible. So just heads up there. You've only prevent them from seeing you, not hearing you. So
yeah.
Right.
That's true.
Just to be, don't want to get you too comfortable.
It's all the little steps. They add up. So that's it's better than nothing.
Yeah, and they get you on watch lists and things like that so you can feel important.
Yeah, but can't you do this? Can't you take, let's say, for example, take a some earbuds and cut the little plug off?
Yes, actually, you can.
And plug that in?
Actually, but I have seen people do that, right? And used to think it would work, but that switch from the built-in microphone to your mm-hmm. plug-in microphone, that's a software switch. So if they're already in your system and rooted your system, they could be overriding that switch or that change and still be grabbing your internal microphone.
Work. Yes. They haven't gotten you yet.
Well,
of course you would
then
know.
You don't need to worry about it.
I think that's an important distinction to make.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Do you just trust your computer, or do you operate behind your computer as though it's already been cracked and broken into?
What's the utility you told me about that audits the computer?
There's a tool, at least on Scent servers, that's called Linus, L-Y-N-I-S.
It works on all those platforms,
okay,
actually.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I did some testing. I just can't remember the name.
It's a nifty little security scanner. It'll tell you a bunch of basic things that you should do about your computer, and if you've got any like glaring problems, like allowing root login over SSH. And then speaking of SSH, make sure your firewall is running.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And if you're running just a laptop, why are you running the SSH server? Shut that down. You don't need it.
Yeah, there's actually nothing shared off of my laptop. So that's...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have my firewall locked down on my laptop. I was just about to say something, and I forgot it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, Phil, just seeing different servers that are running on a laptop that don't make sense to run. I know that the one you mentioned is certainly a good one. Also, I've seen multiple instances of Apache server running in the background, not on my laptop, but on my desktop. Now, I have used... there are some things that I may have used that have some kind of web aspect to them that might have generated those instances. But I think that it's kind of interesting to sometimes go through processes just to see what's going on.
Yes.
And that's what I've done. And HTOP, I think, is that's what I use.
Yeah. That's a really, really nice one.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a super, super cool-looking interface compared to regular TOP.
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah, but you got to install it. Well, at least on my distro, it's not native. It doesn't come natively with it. You've got to install it. Where I think TOP is
and with included. The FreeNAS U4, HTOP is installed.
Ooh, there yes. you go. There you go. Okay.
All right, Well, I think that's pretty much most of the... Get you started. I mean, then once you're done with all this and your laptop's secure, connect to the internet and give all your data to Facebook.
Yeah.
Yes. you got to do that.
That's the important last step.
Because if you go work out at the gym and you don't take selfies and post them to Instagram, did you ever work out? let's talk for a moment about when you actually do get
online.
Only
if you fell in the woods and the sound was, what was it?
Now, there is an interesting thing. There is a group of people using Google's TensorFlow to listen for illegal chainsaw logging in the rainforest. So if a tree does fall in the woods, eventually TensorFlow will hear it.
That's interesting.
when you do get online, I like to use Privacy Badger.
Yes.
The EFFs, HTTPS everywhere, and set that to strict mode. There's another...
And Firefox. If you didn't listen to our last episode, you should be using Firefox, not Chrome.
Yeah, right. Ghostery is a nice one. There's also something called Decentral Eyes. So that will cache JavaScript and CSS that you would typically have to call out to a CDN for your browser to retrieve, but it will cache it locally for you, so you don't have to make as many network calls.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And then always patch your software.
Always
keep your system up to date.
Yep.
That's the easiest, absolute easiest thing that you can do to keep yourself safe.
Right.
Yep.
You know, there's two other things I like to do on my servers. A fail to ban. Yep. I like to install fail to ban because what it does is it watches for failed logins from a specific IP. And if there's so many, you set the limits on there, then it will actually turn on a firewall rule and block that IP for a certain amount of time. You know, so if you're trying to log in and you type it wrong 5 times, then you have to wait an hour before you could try to log in again.
That might be the reason that I've had to go through the Linode list shell so many times to get back into my own box. Yeah.
And then there's actually one for port scans, too. If it recognizes the port scan is hitting your system.
Is that you?
If it recognizes the port scan is hitting your system, it'll block that IP completely from your system. So it starts at whatever ports, and then once it gets close to, I'm assuming once it would get close to a port you might have open, then it'll just start blocking that port and or that whole IP, and then they never find out if you have anything open on your system.
Cool. So, I did not know about that.
Yeah, I've got to look it up. I it's not one that I have installed. I was going to one day and then just missed it somehow. I'll have to look it up again and let you know. Fail to ban is always, if I have an internet facing thing, I install it on everything. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that's how to comfortably wear your tinfoil hat setting up.
Right. There's lots and lots of other things. So don't stop there. Usually what I do is when I'm setting up a system for the first time, I will go through the normal things I do. This is internet-facing servers. And then I will start Googling, you know, what are other people doing? And I trust the DigitalOcean how-tos.
Those are good guides. I really like them. Yeah. I go to those too.
Yeah.
All right.
For the ultra paranoid, I guess you could look up the DISA STIGs for your different operating systems.
Oh yeah.
DISA STIGs. I'm not familiar with that.
DISA space STIG all caps. It's a big long process. But if you want to super secure a machine, you could look into that as well.
Awesome. And run cubes. We did a review of it.
Yeah, that kind of solves a lot of problems.
Yeah. STIGs is the Security Technical Implementation Guides. And it's a DISA is a defense.
Yeah.
Right.
There's options.
But yeah, so it's security guides that the U.S. government suggests that you follow.
Yep, that's basically wrapping yourself.
Have those regs been rolled? Yeah. Maybe they've been rolled back. No.
Well, no. I mean, it's general guides, right? Of what you should do. Like, you don't share passwords. Okay, there's basic things, but then there's things that are operating system and software specifics that they say if you're going to run Microsoft SQL 2016, you should really look at these things and decide whether that's relevant to your organization.
Yeah, and turn your email into text based instead of HTML based, which is what I do.
Yeah,
you could stop the tracking pixel that way.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Really? Okay.
You know what the tracking pixel is?
Yes, it's a 1x1 pixel that's like a web beacon.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Yep. I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Well, that was dumb luck then. All right.
All right, so you've come to the end of the show, or we've come to the end of the show.
Yeah, I think we all have. Right. Both you, the listener, and us.
We're all at the end of the show.
Yeah. Right. You have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 273.
Healthy Paranoia.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.